There was one huge prominence, at least 500,000 kilometers high, that had climbed so far from the sun that its upper branches looked like a tree of crimson fire. "So now we have to wait," Norton told himself. "The important thing is not to get bored, to be ready to react at a moment's notice, to keep all the instruments aligned and recording, no matter how long it takes." That was strange. The starfield was shifting, almost as if he had actuated the roll thrusters. But he had touched no controls, and if there had been any real movement, he would have sensed it at once.
"Skipper," said Calvert urgently from the nav position, "we're rolling. Look at the stars. But I'm getting no instrument readings."
"Rate gyros operating?"
"Perfectly normal. I can see the zero jitter. But we're rolling several degrees a second."
"That's impossible."
"Of course it is. But look for yourself."
When all else failed, a man had to rely on eyeball instrumentation. Norton could not doubt that the starfield was indeed slowly rotating. There went Sirius, across the rim of the port. Either the universe, in a reversion of pre-Copernican cosmology, had suddenly decided to revolve around Endeavour, or the stars were standing still, and the ship was turning. The second explanation seemed rather more likely, yet it involved apparently insoluble paradoxes. If the ship was really turning at this rate, he would have felt it, literally, by the seat of his pants, as the old saying went. And the gyros could not all have failed, simultaneously and independently. Only one answer remained. Every atom of Endeavour must be in the grip of some force, and only a powerful gravitational field could produce this effect. At least no other known field. Suddenly the stars vanished. The blazing disk of the sun had emerged from behind the shield of Rama, and its glare had driven them from the sky.
"Can you get a radar reading? What's the Doppler?"
Norton was fully prepared to find that this, too, was inoperative, but he was wrong.